Hi. Welcome to the Studio Musician Academy podcast. Today's guest is Jeff Roach. Jeff is a phenomenal keyboardist and arguably one of the best sound design slash synth programmers out there. The man doesn't even own Omnisphere. That's how much of a badass he is. Always a great energy in the room and an incredible ear for music. If you're looking for clues on how to maintain a consistent career on an instrument that has buried many in its ever-evolving technological wake, come hang with me and Jeff. Hi, Jeff Roach.
Hi there.
How are you?
Surviving the dream, as they say.
As they say. So, you, sir, are a session keyboard player. How did you arrive at being a session keyboard player?
Funny you should ask, Biles. I moved out here actually not to do that. I'd always had bands and stuff through college, and I sang and played and did my weird music. And I moved out here because I figured this would be the place to be. I love New York, but couldn't live in New York. Can't stand Los Angeles, although the weather's nice. But came out here. I was telling Gio just a little bit ago, worked in a clothing store for a minute to pay the bills.
Is that where you get your impeccable fashion sense?
Don't you know it? My wife worked at Dillard's behind the makeup counter, and I worked at a clothing store, none of which I could have afforded. It was all super high-end stuff. So, Miles, I could put you in an Armani suit, and I knew how to market. I could dress you.
Except you would have called security on me. You wouldn't have.
Oh, we wouldn't even let you in the store.
Of course not. Okay, good.
But anyways, that lasted maybe a year and a half, and then I went out on the road for a bit to get that experience and discovered pretty quickly that was not the life for me.
Yeah.
But anyways, I got an opportunity one time to audition for a slot to play for Marcus Hummann. My old friend. I love Marcus. What a genius Marcus is.
Wow. And, that was your... Really?
Yep.
Man.
Kip Raines played drums for him.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. Mark Prentice played bass. Wow. Eric Silver, I think, played fiddle and mando and all this kind of stuff. So we did a gig or two.
And he's
He can play.
He's kind of ridiculous, right?
He kind of muscles everything. You get him a guitar and it's like... He's going to play some chords, but he might also just tear the guitar in half. It's like...
Okay. So you weren't exactly nervous that you were dealing with somebody that was...
Oh, no. I've never had an issue with the nerve thing because I played classical piano. You walk into the room and you're like, I'll be playing Beethoven's Concerto number 12 with the second cadenza, you know, and there's a whole sea of big-haired ladies out there just praying that you screw up. And they're all, and no clapping, you know, they're out there taking notes. Did he drop that 32nd note in the 12th bar? But I still can't read to save my life.
Really?
No.
Really?
I can hunt and peck, but it's all ear. My piano teacher, rest her soul, I loved her, Miss Hubbard. She would get so mad whenever.
I bet she hated you.
Well, I was the odd duck among all of the other little nerds that took piano from her because I would do the Bach festivals and all that kind of stuff. She was a guild teacher, one of these hardcore teachers. It wasn't like, you want to learn Ice Castles? You know, no. Okay. It was, today we're talking about Chopin. And so she would sit down and I would stare and hunt and peck and she'd get so mad. But when we had these recitals, when all the parents would show up and there was punch and cookies and all that stuff, at the end of the recital, she'd always go, Jeffrey, why don't you come up and play some of that junky music? And I'd always...
Junky music?
Or garbage music. She'd call it something like that.
Let's go with junky music. I like that way better.
And so I would play, you know, Great Balls of Fire or something like that or some blues thing. And the parents were all like, you know, they loved that. So I had this weird sort of like strange celebrity among those kids.
Oh, that's awesome.
But anyways, yeah, I got to do a few sessions with Marcus and I thought, wow, this is pretty cool. I can stay in town.
Yep.
A check comes in the mailbox.
Was Marcus artist stuff or songwriting stuff? Was
both.
Okay.
Started on doing sessions with him just as a writer and was always blown away with his writing. I did get to write with him once, and I remember playing around and coming up with the music and just working on an idea lyrically, and he just spit something out like freaking Walt Whitman, and I just said, I think I'll just go make you a sandwich. and you continue doing that. I'm not even going to step into your realm. This is your show.
I bet it was a great sandwich, though.
It was, yeah, it certainly was.
I bet it was a lovely sandwich. You started in on doing demos then pretty quick.
Yeah, I mean, it took a while. My wife was working, and that was fine. And I did everything I could. You know, I had a little recording, like a four track in my apartment, and you would bounce and bounce and match. You get like 62 tracks out of a four track. And by the time it's done, it sounds like
so degraded. It's just like, what is even, there's no transients. It's just a wash.
It's like somebody's got a noise generator just cranked through the whole thing. I'm using Dolby. It doesn't matter. But I learned to record that way.
One of my biggest questions for you is as far as when you came in to the scene and the fact that you're still here, still very much here, your chair has probably changed more than anyone else's in terms of the scope of your chair. Right? I would think. Name me another instrument that has seen more of, you know, in terms of being dragged along by the technological wave of...
You know what's funny about that? It's funny you say that. When I was in my late 20s and doing this, I've always loved synthesizers. My dad never understood it. He was like, okay, what's all them weird noises? I sound like Hank Hill. I'll tell you what, buddy. But I've always had synths and stuff, you know, from the Mini Moogs and the Arp Odysseys and the Axe and all that stuff. I love all that junk. So I would get hired early on for all of my crazy beep boop capabilities.
Right.
And because I primarily listen to pop stuff.
Right.
And they'd be like, bring in that kid and all those weird things and let him make all that beep boop noise.
And I'm assuming that's what the Roach sounds, because you had the stickers with the logo
Are you talking about this one?
Oh, that's so crazy. I didn't even know that you would have that.
Mm.
Sounds. You were a sounds guy. You were known for...
I love sound design stuff. That's my thing, is I've always liked the sonic thing, or trying to paint with other colors. I've always tried to shoehorn a synth into a country song where it doesn't belong.
Well, and that's... To me, you were one of the few guys that seemed to make that transition pretty seamlessly, because you weren't having to train yourself on soft synths like a lot... Because it seemed like a lot of guys that were doing a lot of work in the 90s, especially, mm-hmm, when it came into the 2000s, were sort of being forced into, hey man, you got to get Omnisphere, you know, you got to, you know, it's like, oh shit, I got to, okay, I got to get, you know, a lot of those guys were sort of like thrust into learning some of that stuff, whereas you were using analog synths on sessions.
Yeah, I still don't own Omnisphere. Everybody said, do you own Omnisphere?
I love it.
Yeah.
Oh. It's so
I'm
fantastic.
Sure it's great, but everybody's got it, so that's my thing. I can't have it.
That's great.
I had, like, everybody owns the Nord stage, and I had one of the very first ones. You couldn't even order it from the store. You had to buy it through this distributor. Back then it was called Armadillo Music or something out of Florida.
Okay.
And I had the Nord stage, and I was like, this is going to change my life. Why is it red? Okay, it's red, whatever. And I get it. It's great. Well, of course, 3 months later comes the Nord stage X or whatever the next iteration of it was. And so, boop, 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 boop. Hey, man, what can I do to mod this to give it some more memory or whatever? And I've told the story before. And Klaus or whatever the guy's name was like, well, we've completely redesigned the board that the memory chips reside on. And I was like, I paid $4,000 for this. And now to get, no. So I played it for a while, and it's great. It's really great.
Wait, but how long ago was that? Because you're still carrying this chip. You won't do it. You won't play it. Hey, do you have a Nord?
Oh, no, not anymore. I sold it almost immediately.
How?
Because everybody's got one.
Everybody does.
They do. It's ubiquitous.
And the assumption is that you have to. The assumption is that you have to have Omnisphere.
No.
That's what a lot of people, especially younger kids, think now.
Oh, yeah. I get the one. I do a lot of... Well, I've done a lot of like EDM stuff. And what's the one that everybody's got from that they go, oh, you've got this right, the patch.
Nexus?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's like, no, I don't use that either. Everybody uses it.
Those are all the big ones.
Yeah,
that's the big standards.
Those are the big ones. And granted, I use Kontakt and all that because that's become the catch-all sampler. But
Do you use any of the other like Native Instruments standalone synths, or do you just use the Kontakt stuff as a sampler?
I've got the package that comes with absolutely everything, yeah. And it's, you know, it complete, fills a hard ultimate, drive. It's complete. Like, do I want the sound of wild buffalo stamping through? You know,
right.
I've got it. And then once in a while, someone will go, hey, man, do you have those that gamelan played through a toilet bowl? And I'm like, yeah, actually, I do. but normally, I'm a very much roll your own kind of thing. And I just love the sounds of synthesizers. If yeah. I want something to sound real, I will either try to get somebody to play the real one, although I've played fake banjo and all that stuff, and I know that's heresy in this city.
Absolutely not heresy in this city, and you know it.
It used to be.
It should be.
I put some fake steel, like the Lenoir kind of spacey steel on something the other day, and I just know if any of my friends are steel players, you know, I'd be getting that look.
Well, that's the thing. Like, now guys are referencing on sessions that stupid steel patch in Omnisphere.
Oh, there's one in Omnisphere.
Oh, yeah. And producers now know it. And they're asking keyboard players to pull up that steel patch on Omnisphere to play steel.
I'm not familiar with that one. I've got one that's literally a pedal steel program for Kontakt.
Oh, okay.
Somebody spent 5 years of their life.
It was probably
mapping this out. Yeah. And the crazy thing is what sold me on it, because I just felt bad about just doing it. Like, I just shouldn't do this. I saw some guy sit down at a keyboard and start tearing into some Texas Swing C6 neck stuff on a keyboard. And I thought, okay. I'm never gonna learn to do that.
Right.
But the fact that you can do that is pretty nuts.
That's awesome.
I've always liked the twisted knobs and that kind of stuff. Although the soft synth stuff that's available now is really good. It didn't used to sound good, but now it does sound good.
You could be listening to any podcast in the world, but right now you're here with us, and we want to thank you for listening. We created this community to make expert mentorship available to every musician who is passionate about making a living doing what they love. Do you know someone who would enjoy this podcast? If so, we'd be grateful if you could hit that share button and spread the good word on the Studio Musician Academy. If you're not part of the band yet, you can grab your free account today at studiomusicianacademy.com. Thank you for listening. Now back to the show.
How do you best navigate, you know, because it does sound like you do like to roll your own, mm-hmm. which I love that. But, you know, in demo situations where you're cramming through six songs and three
You mean
hours,
like if I'm on a session for somebody?
If you are on a session for somebody, yes. And
you're on drums.
Of course I'm on drums.
Yeah, why wouldn't you be?
But, I mean, do you have a pretty good preset thing where you know,
yeah,
speed purposes that you can kind of blow through some stuff?
I've got like three, four different pads that I just immediately, I'm going, okay, they want a pad. The organ was the killer.
Right.
And it wasn't so much creating the tone of the organ. It's primarily just a bunch of sine waves with garbage all in the middle of it, giving it that sound. It's the Leslie. It's the Doppler. It's the craziness of that thing. So, strangely enough, I was working at Omni one day, and we'd finished one of these sessions, and I'd just finished playing the organ. And I said, Rory, just as everybody's packing up, I said, go outside of the session and just go into record. And I'd play some chords, and I basically went through each individual drawbar and kind of listen to that and listen to a few other things. And I said, all right, just crank up. I want to hear just the Leslie. And I said, make an MP3 of that and just mail it to me. So he sent it to me. And when I got it home, I opened the little faux organ that comes in Logic, which when you first hear it, it's the worst sounding thing you've ever heard. But it has this page, expert page, and a Leslie simulation page, all part of that soft synth. And I went in and dialed that thing up, and I've got it on my controller. I have all the drawbars, at least the 9 basic drawbars.
Right.
I can turn the percussion on, which harmonic it gets turned on, reverb. I can crank the distortion. I've got it all figured out. And that stupid laptop organ, when they didn't have a real one, has been on so many records, and no one can tell the difference. Most of the stuff we're working on around here, there's not sound design involved.
Right.
You know, I'm trying to paint in frequencies. Like, I just finished the session this morning. You've got Danny, Doug Moore's playing steel, and he wants to hear organ, which is oftentimes the steel eraser, as they call it. So I always ask Dan, because I know this is country music, and they want to hear that pedal steel guitar. I'm like, Dan, where are you kind of living? And he'll play me his chorus part or his solo bit. So I'll just move down an inversion or two. So we just spread out that.
You talk about painting with frequencies. How does that apply in terms of listening to other players and figuring out what they're doing and how that establishes what your part is going to look like?
I had one this morning that someone literally said faces, and I knew exactly what they're talking about. Right. So I pulled up a Whirly and I ran it through an amp and distorted it and, you know, played that kind of part. But you're still listening to where the guitars are living holistically, that you're supporting that role. Because 9 times out of 10, it's not about the keys. It's usually going to be the guitar. He's the guy standing in front with the microphone singing. If it's anything that gets into low information, we had a song yesterday that the bass didn't even come in till the second verse. And they wanted a pad. But the pad needed to be dull and dark enough. And the guitar was electric, but it was like a 335. So it was a mellow kind of tone. And I knew I didn't want to muddy that up. So I had to sort of fit around that. I had to thin it out in certain places. But I made sure I played the low end. I played the bass notes and those changes up until the point that the bass player came in. And I made sure it was out by then. Otherwise, it would have just been muddy and we're not going to think to play the exact same notes.
Right.
On organ especially, because each time you pull those top stops, which represent pipes, the higher ones that you pull out are the higher frequency overtones, so that's when they get whistly. For verses and filler, I'm on the top manual, and the loud, more raucous stuff, I'm on the lower manual. I mean, you could do it the opposite of that, and I always set up some kind of little presets that in case I need one section where I need an entirely different tone that I wouldn't have time to quickly change all the drawbars, I just pick one of the last two preset keys up there, set those drawbars where they are. That way, when I get to that section, I hit that key and I've got it, and I can just hit the other one back and I'm back to the previous setting. One of my tricks, I'm going to, spoiler alert.
Oh, please.
For a long time, everybody was big into like the gated synth thing,
right?
You know, where you would play a chord and if you've got MIDI clock, you get that, you know, whatever. And I'm on organ and they wanted to do that. And I thought a synth is just going to not fit in here at all. I would set up the top two key switches to a tone that's complementary, but yet very different from two other keys or so that are right below it that are preset already from Hammond.
Okay.
And that way, if I'm holding a note, I just toggle and play the left keys in sync to the click or to the U or whatever. And the tonality jumps around so much that it sounds like a gated synth.
That's cool. Okay.
And people are like, what is he doing? It sounds like I'm playing a whole bunch of different stuff, but all I'm doing is just switching the keys.
That's awesome.
The Studio Musician Academy was created to make expert mentorship available to every musician who is passionate about making a living with their instrument. Through sharing the lessons we've learned on our journey, we hope to provide you with the resources to blaze your own trail. We'd love to invite you to join the band and check out our training sessions at studiomusicianacademy.com. We have a deep catalog of exclusive bonus content that is free for band members, as well as complete training sessions for many of our guests. Join the band today for free at studiomusicianacademy.com.
You've actually, it's almost been a little self-deprecating when you've said it, but you know, like, we're just here to be the track grout guy.
But it's keys. That's typically.
But that's great. I think that's an excellent description of keys.
You miss me if you mute it, but you unmute it and you're like, there's something happening in there.
It looks like shit's going to fall apart. Looks like the tiles are coming off the wall. I think the track grout is great.
What's funny is I was the guy back then that did all that stuff and still right. do, but that's mainly for, I get to do all of the crazy stuff mainly for clients that aren't here.
Right.
And it's weird. Like it's probably been 6 months ago. I have kind of a long distance friendship with Giorgio Moroder. He is the godfather of disco. Literally.
Oh.
So when you would like see these pictures of the guy with the aviator sunglasses, the mustache, the chest hair and the chains and the white suit, that is literally Giorgio. He was one of the first people signed to Casablanca Records.
Oh, wow.
All of the gigantic Donna Summer hits.
Wow.
I mean, doo-goo-doo-goo-doo-goo-doo-goo-doo-goo-doo-goo. I Feel Love.
Yeah.
I just did a remix of that 6 months ago probably for him. 9 minutes of that song stretched out for a Fendi fashion show in Milan.
That's cool.
So that's the kind of junk I do on the side. But around here, it's like, man, go play some Whirly.
Yeah.
So that's, but now what's funny is I don't know if it's an age thing or what, but I'm doing less of that stuff on the row, and I'm kind of more the guy that can play traditional country.
Right.
I grew up playing that stuff. So,
well, and that's the interesting thing that I've seen too is, you know, a lot of these younger guys that are coming in that are really, really good with the soft synth stuff. They've got all that figured out, sound design, you know, they've already got tracks built and they're track guys and they're doing all the stuff. But you put them up against Mike Rojas or Steve Nathan or you on a piano or on
those
an organ,
so good.
You know, oh my God, all y'all are ridiculous when it comes to just the instrument. And you know, there seems to be a bit of a gap in some of the younger generation in terms of not being as ridiculous as some of y'all are at just playing keys. What are some of the things that you've felt like you've kind of had to work on later in your career where you were like stuff that you didn't think needed attention? Have you found anything that you were like, you know, I
wish my apathy quotient wasn't so high. Like I said, I never set out to do this, but I would say that there was certainly a time when I was younger. Maybe it was hormones. I don't know. But I was always like, I don't know how to play this style. And I really want to know how to play that style. Like, for instance, jazz. I can fake it a little bit, but I'm not a jazz guy. And I hate the fact that I don't have a vernacular for jazz because I'm impressed by it. I love the harmonic content of that stuff.
And you're missing out on a lot of money.
Oh, sorry. I just love you.
Sorry.
Man. So, but it's the player part of me wishes I could do that. And I thought, you know what? That's not me. There's several genres that are not in my wheelhouse.
Are you scared of Christmas songs at all ever?
Sometimes because they can lean really heavy
jazz.
Pretty
jazz.
If it's something weird.
I get real scared when it's Christmas. I'm terrified.
Just stirring the soup.
When they're like stirring the soup, I'm like, YouTube videos, like how to brush. The first time I ever stirred the soup was on, it was either a Chris Young Christmas record or Rascal Flatts Christmas record. It was like a very large Christmas record that I was terrified.
But so you
terrified.
Say Rascal Flatts, and I can't imagine it dipping way too far into outside of their
audience. It got
pretty
wild, and I'll tell you why. Sweet Tim Akers, God rest his soul.
Oh, yeah, he's wow.
He arranged that whole record with Jay, and so it got pretty deep.
I got called once to play on it was like a Southern gospel thing, which I when I was a kid, I grew up Church of Christ. We didn't even have a piano.
Okay.
It was all Acapulco, as they say. I sat down and I remember Paul Franklin was playing steel. I'm trying to remember who the band was. It might have been Needham on drums, but we were at Sound Emporium, and the guy who wrote it was a pianist, and he could play all of that Liberace kind of stuff. It's all rubato at the beginning. Starts in F sharp, which is the greatest of all keys on a piano. The band doesn't even come in for like 3.5 minutes. It's modded 5 times before the band comes in. I am sweating blood. And the guy who wrote it and plays it, I can see him pacing in the control room.
Oh, God.
We finally get through it, and I just apologize profusely. I said, look, I did it in the only way I'm capable of doing it, okay? I know it is not what the work tape had, and you'll probably replace it. And guess what? I'm fine with that. I'm perfectly fine with my name being nowhere on this project, and I have enough ego strength to know I'm not the guy. I can name 2 or 3 guys that I know could read this and get it perfect. And they're all like, nah, man, it's all cool. The next one's easy. Next one's Convention. And I looked over and I'm like, what the hell is Convention? I had no idea what that meant. And they play it. And Miles, it was that. It's the stride piano thing. And I looked up and I went, I'm out.
Remember when I said the only thing that I'm not the guy for? So there's two.
Oh, and I remember taking the producer literally in the hallway. I feel bad. I mean, he thought I was kidding. I grabbed him like this, and I shoved him against the wall. And I was like, Jeremy, don't ever call me on something like this. He goes, oh, it's all good. And I shoved him. I was like, I'm serious. Don't ever do this. It's bad for your career. It's bad for my career. It's bad for everybody.
You know what's great is you probably didn't even have to say anything. I think just the assault... probably was going to not get you called again.
And he's such a great guy. He's so sweet. And luckily, and there's another guy that his studio, they do a lot of that. And I have made it painstakingly clear, I'm not your guy.
Yeah, we tell a lot of the younger guys coming in, like, you got to be ready for kind of anything, but you really don't. I mean, the first time I played a bossa nova groove in my life was on a record. Oh, yeah. And you know, the great part about it was there was a Brazilian drummer there just so happened to be there for one song out of six on one session. Scotty Sanders brought him in. And I thought Scotty was joking. He came to me after somebody just told
Scotty me. Scotty never jokes.
Of course not. It's totally straightforward. But they were like, hey, you know, we're doing this Latin jazz version of Luck Be a Lady. And I was like,
Wait, what? Right after something about a beer or a dirt road.
What are we doing? And Scotty comes in the room. He's like, hey, I had a buddy coming by. I just hope it's cool. He's like Brazilian drummer. You know, he's mostly into the South African drumming thing or South American drumming thing. You know, it's not really a country guy. And we're playing a Latin jazz thing first.
Was
and
it
he's
like
just staring
really
me down.
Bossa nova, like hardcore, freaking Pastor Gilberto stuff?
Yeah, it was that. And wow. I had never played that groove until that moment. And I was... you know, having to just sort of fake it for the 3 minutes that I had that Larry was tuning to get ready to spend a whopping 30 minutes on this song that I've never, you know, messed with. So
I'd be clenched up pretty tight.
Oh, I was definitely clenched up. But I guess it's important to mention that it's like, yes, we do need to learn everything and we need to be able to fake most things, but it's not to a degree that you would think.
Yeah. And that would have really bothered me years ago.
Right.
Like, oh, I've let everybody down. I can. If a certain producer calls that sometimes I don't quite know
right.
what the project is.
You'll ask?
Yeah, I'll go, what kind of bake sale are we attending today? You know, what are we into?
Right.
Plus, it helps me know what I need to bring, how to kind of prepare my head for whatever it's going to be. 9 times out of 10, you know what. Everybody's, you know, especially on demo sessions, it's whatever's currently on the radio or what they're going for. But once in a while, you will be thrown a curve. When they call me now, this was the part I'm coming back around to the full circle bit of the traditional country stuff. Like right. I became right to the point where I was out of town, these John Party records, which is absolutely dirt clod country. I get to play piano on that. So you have to observe the rules. Hey, everybody get out. Second verse is mine.
Right.
You know, I get to fill in that.
Well, and on those party records, you got fiddle and steel too.
Yeah. And you have to gang licks together. Yeah. And if it's one of those walking bass things, you know, all the rules between your left hand and the bass player have to, I think, yeah, the UN probably voted on those because they're pretty stringent about those rules.
That's what I hear.
The top story I thought of, which is nothing about my playing, but I remember feeling like such a fish out of water, was when we got to do the John Party Metallica project.
Yes.
Yes, which is, that was like, you just came in that morning just floating.
Oh, dude.
Everybody had, man, I get to crank up my Marshall. Ready. And I'm thinking, Metallica, which keyboard of all of the keyboards that are on Metallica records, should I play? Will it be the Chiffy flute? Will it be the M1 sax patch? What will it be? Will it be the Doogie Howser electric piano sound?
A little DX7, maybe?
And I thought all I could do is about as close as you can get to rock and something like that. It's just, I went in and turned the Leslie up as far as it would go. So it was about 90% distortion and 10% tone. And then we had to learn. What was the song we did? Remember?
Wherever I May Roam.
Yeah, Wherever I May Roam. Which, of course, is just chock full of piano.
So much piano.
Yeah.
Man, that was so much fun for me because, as we all do, I'm so focused on what everybody else is doing and making sure that I'm sitting in the right mood, that I'm not feeling it as being heavier than what the guitar player is feeling it, so I need to soften up to come to him. I was like, all of y'all, I know exactly what I'm doing today, and y'all can get I know what to do. I got it. We're covered.
Mine was very much like yours, different language, but no one cared what I did. But I had to listen to what Derek was playing and basically just compliment that. If a guy was playing organ on this, what would it be? Yeah. But it was, the chart was, you remember how hellish the chart was?
No, I didn't even look at it once. I knew exactly what, I didn't need the chart.
Well, yeah, we have changes.
Yeah, I see.
And I remember, like, there's all these crazy times, and then we'd have to hit these riffs together and everything. It was a blast. And we did it in a session.
Yeah.
But it was, yeah, that was a memorable one.
That was a little cool. Hairy.
They gave everybody, remember, they printed up vinyl. For everybody, I thought that was sweet.
Mine's sitting on top of my vinyl collection. It's I've listened to it. It's actually really good.
I've had the privilege of getting to work with amazing people. Getting to work with Michael McDonald was just something that was amazing to me, and I didn't even really have to play much. He wanted me mainly just to help him come up with a sound on a Prophet synth, and the whole time I'm like, "You're Michael McDonald," and I luckily didn't go, "You're Michael McDonald." I didn't do it that one time.
Well, you made it this far, so I'm guessing you're probably either asleep or hopefully enjoying the conversation. If you haven't joined the band yet, there's a free account waiting for you at studiomusicianacademy.com. But that's not all. Since you're still here with us, we'd love to offer you a podcast fan discount on any individual learning session or full catalog subscription on studiomusicianacademy.com. Just use the code PODCAST to check out. Sorry for the interruption. Now let's get back to it.
If things were to start to go away, you know, as a session player, the tools that you've put in your belt, what are some ways that you're using that to either A, have some sort of extra income? I know you are one of the few guys that have actually taken the time to put out music that you wrote, that is something that is just for you. And not enough of us do that, because yeah, I think
well,
that could be...
Some people have no interest in doing that.
Some don't, but a lot do. And even the ones that don't, I feel like we can all benefit from going through that process where we're looking at it creatively from a couple different angles that we don't normally look at it from.
I think it's really cathartic for anybody that's creative. I'm one of these weirdos that if I'm producing something for someone else, and I'll relate it to how it works with me, they'll play something, and I, for whatever reason, I see like the video in my head. I always see it visually, and so I'm always trying to score the video.
Do you do scoring much? Is that
I've done a little bit of stuff.
Okay, I'm just curious why your brain works like that, because that's interesting.
Well, you know,
well, let's
me
get
and
in
Hans
there and find
are on
out.
A first name, but I'd love to get into that stuff. I had a guy call me one day from L.A. that's moved out there that works with all these film people, and he goes, "Hey, Roach, You do scoring stuff, right?" And I was like, "Absolutely." You know? And he goes, "Do you have a reel?" And I'm thinking, "What is he talking about?" And I said, I think I've recorded something. Give me a couple of days. I'll try to find it." I didn't have anything. I said, "What is this like?" He goes, "Oh, they're talking to the usual suspects." And I'm thinking, Hans Zimmer, this kind of stuff. And I thought, I need about 3.5-4 minutes of something that's relatively diverse in styles that sounds like something out of a movie. The first one was like multiple time signatures. And what was great about it is there was no film to go to.
Right.
So it was just... But by the time it's done, I was like, this is really cool. Liked it. I sent it off, never got the gig. But I have a reel now.
Have you gotten anything other than the catharsis of doing it out of doing the solo stuff? Because you've been doing it for a while.
I do what I do with my weird oaky stuff just because I have this creative itch that I'll get a weird idea that I want to do. I had created this project several years ago that no one really ever heard. I had met this artist, and he was a great like crooner. I mean, like Mel Torme smooth, right? He could do that, but he also rapped, which you're like, okay, wait a second. But he was great. Then the kid ended up behind, unbeknownst to me, signed some management deal with somebody else. And the day I was going to release it, his now manager calls me and goes, yeah, we're not going to release that. And I was like, excuse me? They took my music up and played it for Lior Cohen, the guy that started Def Jam and all that stuff, right? All this happened behind the back. So when this guy says, yeah, we're not putting that out, Miles, I was so angry. And I deleted every vestige of this person from it, who's really talented. And God bless him, if he's doing his own thing, great. So I was left with a project now of like 6 songs with no vocals, no nothing anymore. One day, I remember reading, and I'm on a Logic, and it comes with Dolby Atmos. And I was like, what is that? You know, so I'm looking into it. A friend of mine who's got a certified Atmos room, he played me some stuff, and it was like mind-blowing. What if I just experiment and learn how to mix in Atmos and put these out? I sent it to my friend, and I said, is this anything that I should even bother with? He goes, dude, please let me mix this. And I said, okay. Well, unbeknownst to me, he's playing it for everybody that comes through the building. The Dolby people from LA were in town, and he was working on this when they came in. And he goes, man, you've got an opportunity here. And he lists out what it could be. And immediately I'm like, well, great. But it's just, it's a creative itch thing, you know, and yeah. I'm not playing country or me and track grout guy. I can go home and twist knobs and make myself happy.
We, as all of us session guys, you know, we get a lot of the younger guys saying, what do I do? How do I do? What do I do? How do I do it? When do I do it? You know, even if somebody doesn't ask me a question, even if they're just like, hey, I just moved to town and I play music and I was thinking about doing music in town. There are things that I will start saying and speaking to them about that they haven't even asked me about yet, you know, especially when it comes to drummers, just talking about like, hey, that's awesome that you're here. Just keep in mind that it doesn't matter what you can play. You know, it's how you can play to a click and blah, blah, blah. Mm-hmm. Like a lot of that stuff. If you were to sit down to coffee right now with a young keyboard player and he would just be like, hey, man, anything you can tell me, is there anything that you would speak to him that would save you from going to coffee with like 7 or 8 other guys that you could just get it out right now?
You're sort of painting in frequencies. You figure out where this person lands. You know, the acoustic is shimmering up here with like your hi-hat and the overheads and that kind of stuff. You stay out of people's way. You kind of find your lane.
Right.
And when you have moments, you do little tasty things. You know, obviously live is probably, you know, different because you're playing to the mood of the song. You're listening to the lyrics. You're like, oh, I'm not going to play some really happy lick in the second verse when the guy's talking about he just buried his dog or whatever it is.
Good. You know? So you actually do listen to lyrics.
Yeah.
Because not a lot of guys do. And I didn't. I've only started doing that as of late. And it doesn't apply as much to me being a non-melodic instrumentalist, but that's great that you do. And
well, I really pay close attention too to where the kick drum hits.
Yeah, you do. Mm. Yes.
Well, I started as a drummer, Miles.
Oh, I know that.
I love drums.
That's awesome.
Hitting drums, but you know, and the piano is a percussion instrument. So, but if I'm playing something that's percussive, I'm definitely listening to where the kick drum falls. So whether I'm syncopating something with it, I'm preempting like an eighth note ahead to make the groove kind of churn along. If it's, you know, you want it to feel like it's moving forward,
right?
Or waiting and kind of pulling the groove back. You know, if you're leaning in or you're pulling back, I'm kind of listening to that. And sometimes even the lyrics will tell you that. You know how for us going into the studio, it's sort of another day at the office. We'll hear a song. You and I haven't worked together in a couple of weeks, and we're yucking it up and talking and all this kind of stuff while the songwriter is playing their song for us, and we're listening through the work tape, and we're maybe looking at a chart and making some little notes and stuff. Years ago, I was working on a Christian record with an artist named Sarah Groves, who's really, really great. So this was a group of guys that I hadn't seen in a while. We all gathered around like the piano, and she was playing the first song, and we had charts. And, you know, Dan and I, Needham was playing drums, and we're horsing around, and I'm talking to so-and-so and all. We're all listening, as we always do. Flash forward about 2-3 years, and we've done a handful of records. And now we're out at Dark Horse. I'm sitting next to Sarah and talking to her, and she says, you know, I just got to tell you, the very first time that I worked with you guys, that my feelings were so hurt. She said, I had seen you guys' names on records that I liked, and I was so nervous. And y'all were just, it was just a typical day. And dude, I just grabbed her and hugged her. And I was like, I'm so sorry. Because I had no idea.
Right.
I never even thought about that. You know, it's like this, they're the ones spending the money. This is their art that they're putting out. And they've left us in charge with not ruining it and trying to lift it to the level that it needs to be. And we were acting just like, it's just another day. You know, hey, hand me that coffee. I'm so glad she said that because I'm sensitive to that now. I mean, I've done tar roofing before on a summer. That is a horrible job.
It's awful.
And you smell like it. It gets in your skin. Yeah. It's so to get to go into an air-conditioned studio and help somebody's musical dreams come to life, and I get to sit down and play a piano, is amazing. So I would tell a young guy, just remember, when you're in the studio, it ain't your show.
Yeah.
It's theirs. So do everything you can to lift them up, because if it's, let's say it's a hit and you did your part of it, you get to reap the rewards of that too.
We think of it so often as a job, and there are many of our clients that for them, they don't care about money. This song means everything to them. Mm-hmm. You know, this art that they've created is very personal. Sometimes even it can feel like a normal where, hey, we're trying to get this on the charts radio song. But, you know, there might be some skin in the game where it's about a relationship that deeply affected that person with their grandfather or whatever. Mm-hmm. There are things that we do that are based on our own insecurities sometimes,
oh,
where
absolutely.
We're trying to project confidence on a session. And so,
I'm doing it right now.
You know, I've acted aloof before because, you know, I want to seem like, oh, I don't need to really pay attention to this because I've got it. I've got it handled. You know, watch this. I'm not even going to listen to your song and go in there and slam it. But they're like, why didn't you listen to my song?
Mm-hmm. It seems like on the day in and day out, most of the time for songwriters in this town, they are listening to, you know, Luke Bryan's looking for a song right now, man. And so everybody's churning out. I think I did 12 the other day that are all George Strait pitches.
Yep.
So I know what that's going to be. If I'm not muted in the final mix, it'll be a miracle because it's not about piano. So, I'm trying not to let the apathy take over. I know my role.
Yeah.
And it's not about me. I'm just going, well, you know what? I'm not working outside.
Jeff, thank you so much for being here.
We're done.
And hanging out with us. We
Is
did
it a wrap?
We covered the stuff.
Yeah, good.
I think the kids are going to be a lot smarter because we had this conversation.
I was thinking the exact opposite, but I appreciate that.